off to someone 30 years your junior. She asks you to play a song. You say, does anyone have a tuner? And someone says, yeah, that guy over there probably has what you need. I think his name is Steve. Well, it turns out Steve has a line on some shit. You take his lead and you run with it. It's 5 a.m. and you're stumbling home again, thinking, man, this. You're fumbling with keys now. Which one is your apartment? There's a tear in your sleeve now. You don't know how you got it. Those stairs always there. You don't know, you don't care. You had it now, you lost it. There's wine in the fridge that you opened last week. You said so many things tonight. Maybe you just shouldn't speak. You know, and you just can't seem to let go of patterns that repeat. I used to buy everything you released. You kept me company while I fell asleep. Play tunes, and there are too many dudes in the room. I just wanna
leave. lot to talk about today. How Trump, Republicans, and their billionaires took your money and then sold you hate. Also, is Larry Kudlow and Fox so-called News allergic to the Constitution? Or are? Is Florida's new map the worst gerrymander in history? In the second hour of our program, I want to get into Trump's DOJ and how they're behaving like they are the personal law firm for big oil. Of course, Republicans have been the personal servants of big oil ever since the 1980s. And Senate Republicans want $1 billion for Grampy's dance hall for Trump's ballroom. In the third hour of our program, our one guest today, Christopher Armitage, is going to drop by. This is way bigger than RICO. Is there a legal strategy that could put the entire Trump GOP criminal enterprise in jail without waiting for an election? Also, did Sam Alito just lose his mind on the bench? We'll get into that. But my op-ed today, my daily take over at HartmanReport.com, is titled, How Republicans, Trump, and Their Billionaires Took Your Money and Then Sold You Hate. What got me thinking about this was a podcast, the Daily Podcast from the New York Times, I was listening to as I was walking home yesterday. And they had Robert Papon, he's a professor of political science, and he was pointing out that these really quite remarkable surveys that have been done, you know, over decades, but the most recent ones, find that about one in five Americans is okay with political violence, which is mind-boggling. And he said about 20 million Americans are apparently okay with assassinations as a way to gain political power. This is mind-boggling. I mean, this follows the third attempt on Trump's life, the murder of the two legislators in Minnesota, Melissa Hortman and her husband, as I recall, the murder of Charlie Kirk, the ICE executions, assassinations of three U.S. citizens in the past year. We're also seeing an increasing acceptance of violence toward minorities and women. ICE is brutalizing Hispanics, including children, sending them to foreign torture camps, deporting them to the Congo and other war-torn hellholes, keeping over 70,000, including thousands of children, in brutal, primitive conditions that would be shut down if they were animal shelters. Violence against women is also increasingly accepted by the right wing of America's society. Trump has been credibly accused of multiple rapes and assaults and nailed by a jury of his peers for one of them. Hegseth's own mother called out how he's abusive toward women. Accused rapists like the Tate brothers are tight with the Trump boys. There's an online rape academy that got 62 million American visits in 1 month. That's mind-boggling. This year. And Republicans shrug it all off, or they revel in it, while attacking and dismantling DEI and woke as anti-white male, as if it's all just fine with them. Bring up the topic and they accuse you of being a snowflake. So what the hell is going on? Why have American men, particularly white men, seemingly gone violently nuts over the past generation or two? And why do they revel in images and memes of violence and follow these so-called manosphere influencers? We discussed this very briefly yesterday on the program, and but it's worth revisiting in a big way. I think this is being driven by three factors. The first is economics, and I'm going to get into each one of these, economics. The second is good old-fashioned racism, and the third is, you know, good old-fashioned misogyny. And I say good old-fashioned because both these things have been around as long as history has been around. And those three things, economics, racism, and misogyny, have been brought together and weaponized by the Republican Party. Because Republicans understand all this stuff very, very well. I mean, this is their strategy. Democrats, not so much. And Democrats need to figure this damn stuff out. First, the economics. When Reagan came into office in 1981, two-thirds of American men were in the middle class, and they could do it with a single paycheck. Many men define their masculinity, as it were, by their ability to provide for their families. It's you know, you can say it's sexist, and I would not disagree with that. But it's also a cultural norm. And, you know, it's very hard to think outside of the way that we were raised, right? So what happens is when Reagan came into office and declared war on working class people, busted PATCO, declared war on unions, took it from a third of us being unionized and two-thirds of us being in the middle class as a result, down to 10% of us, or 6% of us now in the private sector, being unionized, and 43% of us in the middle class. And it now takes two paychecks instead of one to be in the middle class. What happened was a lot of white men in particular, and men generally, but I'm speaking here about why are white men embracing all this violence. A lot of white men felt emasculated, that they had lost their traditional male role as breadwinner. And so then, you know, and this started becoming obvious in the years immediately after the Reagan presidency in the 1990s, and when Rush Limbaugh and Fox so-called News began their programs, and both were telling America that it was the women's fault. Limbaugh called them feminazis. Remember that? And, you know, Republicans in Congress, you know, they're still fighting the Equal Rights Amendment, for example. And Trump, his famous claim that he could grab women, he could assault women, sexually assault women, because when you're a star, they let you do it, added to the Republican permission structure for all this. But Republicans didn't just blame the collapse of the middle class on women, although they certainly did. They also claimed that blacks and Hispanics were stealing white people's jobs and driving down wages, immigrants as well. This is all to deflect attention from the right-wing billionaires and big corporations that are, you know, basically robbing us blind. And, you know, on the issue of race, there's, you know, I think one of the really important things to remember is that in 1915, when Woodrow Wilson, a racist, screened Birth of a Nation in the White House and publicized it, within 2 years, the membership of the Klan went from a moribund 400,000 to an enormous 5 million nationwide. In 1925, there were 35,000 Klan members in robes and hoods who marched down Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington, D.C. during a Republican administration. This was during the Coolidge administration. And it was just fine with Calvin Coolidge. So, you know, here we are, right? When the president of the United States endorses racism, racism explodes. It happened in the era from 1915 to 1925. It only got, you know, that fever got broken by World War II. And then it happened again when Donald Trump started in March of 2011, started promoting birtherism, his racist attacks against Obama, and it's been going on for basically 20 years. Or 15 years, arguably. And most recently, you know, he called Hakeem Jeffries a thug and low IQ. I mean, this is just right open racism. So, you know, there's this whole permission structure around this whole thing. You got Elon Musk tweeting about race and all this stuff. So what do we do? How do we fix this? Well, first, we bring back a healthy middle class. This isn't rocket science. FDR did this in the 30s and 40s. Truman, Eisenhower, Kennedy, LBJ, Nixon, Ford, and Carter, presidents of both parties, expanded the New Deal right up until Reagan. So we should roll back the Reagan, Bush, and Trump tax cuts, both for corporations and the morbidly rich. We need to join every other developed country in the world in offering a free or low-cost national health care system and free or low-cost college, and end all student debt, as Joe Biden tried to do. We need to enforce the antitrust laws, repeal the Right to Work for Less Taft-Hartley Act, and outlaw the billion-dollar union-busting industry so that we bring back the middle class. Okay, that's step one. Step two, deal with the so-called race problem in America by promoting or passing legislation outlawing gerrymandering. You know, bring back nonpartisan commissions all across the United States. Launch a national education program about America's racist history, undoing what Trump is trying to do. And finally, to deal with misogyny, we as a society need to redefine masculinity around competence and contribution rather than around control of women. This is a message that President Obama took on. Being a man isn't about being the sole breadwinner. It's about being reliable, emotionally literate, capable, being someone who shows up for family, work, and community. And then bring back DEI, which principally benefited white women, by the way, and put it back into law. For half a century now, Republicans have bled working white working class men dry. hoovered up their wealth, given it to the Bezoses and the Zuckerbergs, and fought to keep the middle class from reemerging. And what do we have as a result of that? Political violence, racism, and misogyny on steroids. We can reverse these things, but it's going to take the Democratic Party waking up to a clear progressive agenda to make it happen. And you can help with that. Let them know. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Back with more of the news of the day and your calls in just a moment. Stay with us. Welcome back, Chris in Littleton, Colorado. Hey, Chris, thanks for watching us on Free Speech TV. What's on your mind today?
Yeah, good morning, Tom. We have a great opportunity in 2026.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is corruption. Most candidates, both Republican and Democratic, take big money and then have to represent the billionaires and not the people.
Well, I would slightly adjust that. I would say all the Republicans do and about half the Democrats do. But yeah.
Yeah, we got some really good Democratic ones who only take small donations.
Yep.
But in 2026, we have many great new candidates that really will represent the people and democracy running for office. We have an incredible opportunity as voters to elect a majority of honest politicians for people and democracy. This would change our entire government to be so much better.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So
I'd like to tell everyone to vote, make your own life better, make America better, and get everyone you know to vote.
Yep.
And support some of the good candidates also.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. Well said, Chris. Thank you. That was a great public service announcement and something we all needed to hear. Thank you. Bob in Melbourne, Florida. Hey, Bob, thanks for listening to WMNF. What's up?
Yeah, you said that the gerrymandering down here in Florida was the worst you'd ever seen. No, this is the best you've ever seen. This is gerrymandering on a 1 to 10 scale. It's a 12.5.
I get it.
I cannot believe that. And we have a law in Florida that was passed by the people.
Right. It was a constitutional amendment, actually, not just a law.
Constitutional amendment,
yep,
to the Florida Constitution says that.
You can't do that.
You can't do that.
Yep. No gerrymandering for political purposes. And, of course, you know, that was supposed to be the other side, the bookend to the Voting Rights Act, which said no gerrymandering for racial purposes. Well, now the Supreme Court says you can gerrymander for racial purposes. So I wonder if that's what they're going to say. It's all about the black people.
The Florida state legislature is so gerrymandered right now. They have a veto-proof majority. 32% of the people in Florida are registered Republican, 30% are Democrat, and the rest are independents.
Mm-hmm.
Holy moly!
Yeah.
And I'm a Democrat, and I cannot get... My vote just doesn't count. It doesn't count. You know what? And you know one more thing I wanted to say is that if the Trump administration is having so much trouble with Jimmy Kimmel, what the hell would they do if Mark Twain was still alive?
Yeah, or Will Rogers, you know.
Will Rogers, yeah. I mean, come on. Anyway, if you're anybody in any other state, take it to heart. Just come down here to Florida, see how things are going, and you will shake your head and wonder how the hell is going to happen. But they're trying to do this.
You know, there's some talk, Bob, that this gerrymandering is going to, you know, basically dilute enough of these districts that Democrats might actually have a chance down there. You think that's true?
I'm looking at it, especially in the Tampa Bay and the Orlando area.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a chance. They have diluted those two areas so much.
Yeah.
We got a chance. So
do not despair.
Keep your fingers crossed.
Do not give up.
Do not.
There you go. Bob, thank you for the call. Good talking to you. It's 20 minutes past the hour. I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Stay with us. Change starts with you. You can be calling your Democratic or Republican representatives to let them know what you think by calling 202-224-3121. It's the Capitol switchboard. It'll get you right through to them. So back in the 1980s, Louise and I lived in Germany for a year, and one of the stories that I remember hearing from some of the older people who were there in Stadtstenach, who had been alive during the Hitler era, was that the radio and television stations, well, they didn't have television stations, but the radio stations and the newspapers back then had, on radio, it was a particular time of the day, and newspapers, a particular part of the paper, where people could write in or people could call in and denounce their neighbors for being gay or for being disloyal or for being secretly Jewish, and that would then cause the neighbors to all go after them because it was a matter of public record. Now, anything states do in the United States is a matter of public record. The Attorney General of Missouri, Andrew Bailey, has just put up a form on the government's website, the Transgender Center Concerns form, where you can report your neighbors for dressing up as women. This is nuts. There's a whole long rant about this over at HartmanReport.com. Check it out.
They shook hands in the sunlight while the rest of us broke, counting coins at the kitchen table, choking down hope. They said work hard to stay quiet, blame the worms next door. While they emptied out the pockets we were fighting for. You feel it in your bones now, something ain't right. But they keep you looking sideways so you don't see the heist. They took the money, then they sold you hate. Turned your pain into a weapon, pointed it at your neighbor's face. They took the future, locked it behind gates, and handed you the anger, said this is yours, this is fate. Factories went silent, but the shouting got loud. Every scream screaming, enemies inside the same crowd. They said it's them, not us, while they climbed higher still, building walls out of lies and calling it will. Now the fire's getting closer, you can feel the heat, but the ones who lit the match aren't out here in the street. They took the money, hey. Then they sold you hate, hey. Turned your pain into a weapon, pointed it at your neighbor's face.
24 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. So is Larry Kudlow, or are Larry Kudlow and Fox so-called news allergic to the Constitution? Federal Magistrate Judge Zia Farquhi apologized in court yesterday to Cole Allen. He's the guy accused of trying to assassinate Trump at the correspondence dinner. Why did he apologize? Why did the judge apologize? Because Allen, a man with no prior criminal record, presumed innocent under our laws, had been thrown into 24-hour solitary in a padded room with no windows and five-point restraints, denied access to his lawyers, and denied even a Bible. Farquhi called it tantamount to solitary confinement, noted he'd never seen a January 6th defendant placed in five-point restraints, and reminded everyone that pretrial detention is not punishment. Then Fox's Larry Kudlow lost it on the air, hollering, "We're apologizing to this guy?" Yeah, Larry, we did, or the judge did, because that's how the Constitution works. I mean, if you were accused of a crime, you'd want to be considered innocent until you're found guilty, right? Or if you're found guilty. Even Fox's own legal analyst, Jonathan Turley, had to remind Kudlow that prisoners do, in fact, have rights in America. The Bill of Rights doesn't have an asterisk for people that right-wingers don't like, as much as they would like it to be the case. Is Florida's new map the worst gerrymander in history? Ron DeSantis signed Florida's new congressional map yesterday, and within 2 hours, voters and the Equal Ground Education Fund hauled him into court. The lawsuit calls it one of the most extreme gerrymanders in American history. And here's the kicker. DeSantis' own map drawer, a guy named Jason Porretta, admitted in a hearing that he used partisan data to draw the lines. That's a flat-out violation of Florida's 2010 Fair Districts Amendment to its constitution, which 63% of Florida voters approved. Under this new map, Republicans could win 86% of the seats with 55% of the vote. Tampa gets sliced into 3 districts, Orlando into 5. I mean, this is Trump's national strategy. Steal the midterms with a ruler and a Sharpie because they can't win them fair. Republicans have figured this out, right? The average American has no interest in more tax cuts for billionaires. The Reagan, Trump, and Bush tax cuts have already generated a nearly $40 trillion deficit or debt, national debt. The average American has no interest in more Americans being thrown off their health care. Just in the last 2 years, Republicans have thrown some 20 million Americans off their health care or made their health care less functional or, you know, more expensive. Americans have no interest in more pollution in our air and water. Republicans are aggressively trying to increase the levels of pollution. You know, they know that Americans don't want what the GOP is selling. We don't want more poisons in our food supply. We don't want more glyphosate. All these other things that Trump and Bob Kennedy and all the other Republicans are pushing. So what do? They cheat. They select the voters rather than the voters selecting the politicians. It's grim stuff. So what say you? I'll pick up your calls after the break.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
I'll be right back with your calls here on Talk Media for the rest of us, the Tom Hartman Program. Stay with me. Gerrymander hits court. DOJ runs cover for Exxon and Fox forgets the Constitution. Good morning. This is the Commonwealth Report, news for the public, not the powerful. You can sign up for free at commonwealthreport.news and it'll come right to your email box every day for free. Is Trump dragging us into another forever war? The Middle East is on a knife's edge and the Strait of Hormuz is the blade. Donald Trump told Fox so-called news that Iranian forces would be, quote, blown off the face of the earth if they target American ships running his so-called Project Freedom convoys through the strait. CENTCOM says it's destroyed 6 Iranian small boats and shot down cruise missiles and drones aimed at the United Arab Emirates. Iran's own president called the IRGC strikes on the UAE completely irresponsible, reportedly carried out without his knowledge. Trump's dismissing falling American support as, quote, fake polls. Senator Lisa Murkowski wants to introduce an authorization for use of military force to put a leash on this president. She'd better hurry. We've seen this movie before, and it never ends well. Did Sam Alito just lose his mind on the bench? The Supreme Court fast-tracked the killing of Louisiana's majority black congressional district yesterday, and Justice Sam Alito went after Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson with the kind of language you don't typically see from this court. Joined by Thomas and Gorsuch, Alito called Jackson's dissent, quote, baseless and insulting and groundless and utterly irresponsible. Jackson, dissenting alone, said the majority, quote, unshackles itself from constraints and is throwing Louisiana into chaos. Governor Jeff Landry already suspended the May 16th primary so Republican lawmakers can redraw their maps. The 6-3 ruling guts a key piece of the 1965 Voting Rights Act. Black voters in Louisiana are about to lose their seat at the table, and Republicans in Tennessee, Georgia, South Carolina, and Alabama are already lining up to do the same thing. This is gerrymandering by Supreme Court fiat, and it's an emergency for democracy. Senate Republicans want $1 billion for Grampy's Ballroom. Yesterday night, Chuck Grassley and Senate Republicans dropped a $72 billion spending package, and tucked inside it is a $1 billion line item for, quote, security adjustments tied to Trump's gold-plated White House ballroom. Remember when the White House promised this thing wouldn't cost taxpayers a dime? Yeah, never mind. They're running this through reconciliation, so they only need 51 votes. Meanwhile, Iowans are going hungry, jobless, and uninsured under Grassley's watch. Senator Brian Schatz pointed out the one silver lining. Now every senator gets an up or down vote on funding Trump's vanity project. Working Americans pick between groceries and insulin. Trump gets a $1 billion dance floor. That's the deal Republicans are offering this country. Is Larry Kudlow and Fox allergic to the Constitution? Federal Magistrate Judge Zia Farkey apologized in court yesterday to Cole Allen, the man accused of trying to assassinate Trump at the correspondence dinner. Why? Because Allen, a man with no prior criminal record, presumed innocent under our laws, had been thrown into 24-hour solitary, a padded room, no windows, five-point restraints, denied access to his lawyers, and even a Bible. Farquhar called it tantamount to solitary confinement, noting he'd never seen a January 6th defendant placed in five-point restraints, and reminded everyone that pretrial detention is not punishment. Then Fox's Larry Kudlow lost it on the air, hollering, "We're apologizing to this guy!" Yes, Larry, because that's how the Constitution works. Even Fox's own legal analyst Jonathan Turley had to remind Larry that prisoners do in fact have rights. The Bill of Rights doesn't look like an asterisk, or doesn't have an asterisk for people you don't like. Is Florida's new map the worst gerrymander in history? Ron DeSantis signed Florida's new congressional map yesterday, and within 2 hours, voters and the Equal Ground Education Fund hauled him into court. The lawsuit calls it, quote, one of the most extreme gerrymanders in American history. And here's the kicker. DeSantis' own map drawer, Jason Porita, admitted in a hearing that he used partisan data to draw the lines. That's a flat-out violation of Florida's 2010 Fair Districts Amendment, which 63% of Florida voters approved. Under the new map, Republicans could win 86% of seats with 55% of the vote. Tampa gets sliced into three districts, Orlando into five. This is Trump's national strategy. Steal the midterms with a ruler and a Sharpie, because they can't win them fair. Is Trump's DOJ now handling now Big Oil's personal law firm? Trump's Justice Department sued the state of Minnesota yesterday in a desperate bid to kill Attorney General Keith Ellison's 6-year climate fraud case against Exxon, Koch Industries, and the American Petroleum Institute. Minnesota's case accuses Big Oil of running a campaign of deception about climate change while sticking taxpayers with the bill. ExxonMobil alone raked in a roughly $775 billion during the lying years. Federal judges have already tossed similar Trump lawsuits against Michigan and Hawaii, and the DOJ filed copycat suits against New York and Vermont this week. Ellison says the suit is frivolous and meritless, and he's moving to dismiss it. When the Justice Department of the United States becomes the in-house counsel for the world's biggest polluters, you know exactly who's running this country, and it ain't us. And that's the way it is today, Tuesday, May 5th, 2026. I'm Tom Hart. Did you know that every weekday we send out an email before the show giving you all the topics coming up so you could be fully informed and ready to interact with our program? Or that after the show we send out Sue's Stack, a list of every topic I've discussed along with clickable hot links to every source of information I've shared with you on the air? It's all completely free and available over at tom.tv, T-H-O-M.tv. Check it out. Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. What's on your mind today? A lot going on in the world. By the way, Trump keeps saying, oh, we got no war, but we just killed a whole bunch of Iranians and blew up their speedboats. But it's not a war. We're just bringing in more soldiers, but it's not a war. So Congress doesn't have anything to say about it. This is nuts. Michael in Bronx, New York. Hey, Michael, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, before I get to Todd Blanche, let me remind everyone. One minute Trump says we're at war. Another minute he says just what you said, we're not at war. So which the hell is it? On second thought, don't bother answering because I'm sick and tired up the hair with your stinking lies.
Right? You mean
Trump's. Let me start off with that.
Thank you.
Yeah, and the entire administration.
Yeah.
Now let's go to Blanche, another liar on record. The thing is, I don't know if you saw the Meet the Press episode from this past Sunday.
I did not.
He was one of the guests on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry?
I did not see the show.
All right. Well, I'm sure you'll find it on YouTube. I encourage everyone to take a look at that. That guy kept lying through his sinking teeth throughout the entire interview, in which Kristen Welker had to do several fact checks on him. Mm-hmm. But here's two things, since he's acting attorney general, which makes him unqualified for the job as a permanent position. Number one, when it comes to the indictment of James Comey and this whole 8647 thing, he says that James Comey put the life of the president, he threatened the life of the president and put it in jeopardy, which is no evidence whatsoever. First of all, James Comey didn't even touch the doggone seashells.
Right. He just took the picture of somebody else's layout.
But then,
art.
But then, based on his own argument, Ms. Welker rightfully brought up about an image, I don't know what tools were used for this, that said 8646. 46, of course, was Joe Biden.
Mm-hmm.
And so
that was Jack
Posobiec,
or however he says his name, the guy who wrote this insanely this insane book about how liberals are communists and, you know, just the scum of the earth kind of thing. I mean, I actually read his book, and it's mind-boggling.
Yeah, but with the 8646,
right.
Mr. Blanche is going to say, well, there's no evidence of any kind of threat and so forth. But
right.
It couldn't be investigated. They said there was no case and all that. Oh, no case against number 46, but you want to make a false case against 47.
Yep.
And for the record, that 86 was used in a culinary factor. I think I told you this before.
Hmm.
When the food has passed expiration or they run out of the food item, they mark it 86 and indicating you have to get a new one.
Yep.
Now, that's one aspect. The other aspect of Blanche's despicable performance, he was asked at the end of the interview that there is a need of a permanent attorney general. You are acting attorney general. Is there any chance you're going for the permanent spot, or what is it? He says, I don't know what's going to happen. Only thing my job is to do and what I wish to do is just do whatever pleases President Trump.
Hmm. Wow.
That's a disqualification in my book.
That's pathetic. That's pathetic. Michael, thank you.
Pathetic is a gentle statement, buddy, but I can think of a whole lot of other words.
Okay. I'm with you. Thank you, Michael. Matthew in Madison, Wisconsin. Hey, Matthew, thanks for listening to Civic Media. What's up?
Hello, Tom. Thanks again for what you do. I wanted to talk about this Manosphere problem and the attacking of women and whatnot. So I'm Gen X, and about the last 25 years or so or more, I've noticed how women have gotten better jobs, better paying jobs, more secure jobs than men. In my life, my social circle is what I'm referring to.
Sure.
And I went through a lot of relationships and turmoil with this struggling of what is my role as the partner, the man in a relationship, when I'm no longer the breadwinner, if I'm not super handy and can't fix everything around the house for her, this and that,
mm-hmm.
It made me very insecure and kind of angry in some ways.
Yeah, that's kind of my point.
But, yeah, and the men I know in my life that have drifted to MAGA are worse off than I am. Mm-hmm. They're guys that can barely even hold a job, don't have any relationship, any prospects of a long-term partner, much less a relationship. And I'm really so angry at politicians and MAGA in general for feeding off of that insecurity.
Yeah.
It makes me so angry, but it's also so obvious. Like,
mm-hmm.
I could see that anger coming, and every time a discussion came up that fed into that grievance, that insecurity, I would lash out and try to warn people. It's like, don't speak that way in public or to others because you're pushing people to the far right.
Yeah. and
which
I
is
would
an
guess
evil entity in itself.
Right, and I would guess that if you know they say that if productivity, if wages kept up with productivity, the average wage in the United States, which is right now in the high 40s, as I recall, would be in the 90s. You know, the average person, the average worker would be making, you know, around 90 grand a year, close to 100. And if that was the case, if we, you know, if we had not embraced Reaganomics for 45 years, and, you know, presidents of both administrations, both parties, frankly, if we had not embraced Reaganomics, and we still had basically high-paid jobs right across the board, and these were, you know, high school graduate jobs as well as professional jobs. If that was the case, then both men and women could decide if they wanted to go to work, because a single person could raise a family, you know, could pay the cost of the household, and men could they could be the breadwinners if they wanted, if that's what they and their spouse wanted. But you know, women could be the breadwinners if the man wanted to stay home. I mean, during the years that Louise and I have been married, 53 years, I think, and there have been at least a half a dozen years in there where, you know, we started businesses. I would typically start the business, and then Louise would take them over. She's a very good manager. I'm a lousy manager. I'm a good salesman. I'm good at starting things, bad at following through. And so for years, I stayed home with the kids while she ran the businesses. I mean, you know, and like, you know, people would have that choice, but they don't have that choice right now. And so, you know, men end up feeling screwed.
Well, let me just add, too, that upon reflection, you know, I had to struggle with this a lot, like be a better partner outside of my concerns of what I could offer a woman. I had to work on myself. I finally found someone who appreciates me, actually wants me every day. That's what you kind of want to look for, right?
Yeah, that's sweet.
But I also reflected on the education system and the way that boys are taught in our system. It's not ideal for young boys. Like, I just wanted to make stuff. I wanted to be active doing something. Word problems were not the way my brain worked. The way math was taught was not something that got me engaged. If I was taught math in a way that would help me build a cabinet or figure out how to work on a car or do things that men like, I would have paid attention more.
Yeah, that's the essence of the Montessori system.
There are all these things
system.
That we could fix to make it better for boys and men, you know?
Yeah, I agree. And that's you know, it ties into this conversation, although it's really, you know, opens the door to a whole nother conversation about, you know, gender and ADHD and our education system and how our education system came about and how Horace Mann sold this in the 1880s and 1890s to cities. You know, the idea of compulsory public education specifically to create good workers for the factories, you know, et cetera.
Yeah.
But that's a rabbit hole I don't want to go down right now. I wrote a whole book about it, Tom Hartman's Complete Guide to ADHD, which is out of print now. But, yeah, I get it, Matthew. I get it. Matthew, I've got to move along, but thank you for sharing your personal story. That takes
a lot
of courage, and I appreciate it, and it's a very important contribution to the conversation. Thank you. Clifton in Seattle. Hey, Clifton, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. It's been a while. It's been about 20 years since I last talked to you. So,
Whoa. Anyway,
I was thinking that we should use the term barbarians when referring to Republicans.
Well, they would love that.
Yeah, just because they're
proud of their brutality.
So outrageous. Yeah, just a very brutality, very brutal sort of thing.
Yeah.
I've been calling them that since the 90s, actually.
Yeah. I prefer grifters, because there's no way that you can turn that into a positive. But I understand what you're saying.
I just think it's a really good term for them, because I mean, just look at the war in Iran.
How about brutalists?
Brutal, yeah. But I think the term barbarian just gets to the heart of the matter, what they actually are.
Yeah. Barbaric. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and. And I was just listening to the thing on gender and so forth, and I happen to be transgendered, but I have really good relationships with women, so I'm sort of in a different spot. So it is interesting how the dynamic is.
Yeah, I would think that a transgender person would have insights that the rest of us lack.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it would be fascinating.
Yeah.
Clifton, thank you for sharing that.
Oh, no problem. Good talking with you.
Appreciate the call. Thank you. Yeah, nice to hear from you after 20 years, too. Thank you very much. It's 45 minutes past the hour. I'll be back with more of your calls in just a moment. It's the Tom Hartman Program, the place where despair is not an option. Stick around. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Speaking the truth, J.D. Vance in the furniture industry would really rather you didn't know all about. I'll be right back with you. And welcome back. Steve in Chicago. Hey, Steve. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call. I want to strike the same tone with some of your callers talking about the male-female situation and all that. And now, I'm not that much younger than you. I'll be 73 in August, but I got sucked into the Rush Limbaugh thing when in my 30s, early 40s. And that kind of anti-feminism thing, I bought into it because I was going through all that about what's the role and all that stuff.
Yep.
And it's very real. And on another, I think that we've lost, at least for young men, that we need to get back to apprentice programs, shop, things of this nature. And
you know who's really good at that is unions. Unions have training programs like that.
Yes. Yes.
Pardon the interruption.
Also, No problem. And I tend to think that a draft might be a benefit.
I agree.
Military, at least CCP out in the woods for 6 months, planting trees or something.
Or public service.
Something that takes young men. Yes, yes. It used to be, now when I was in high school in 1972, this is going to sound crazy, but a rite of passage was the senior prom.
Yep.
But you had to arrange for a flower. You had to have a date. Back then, you had to have a date. And you had to arrange for your father's car. Now, that's all been watered down. They just don't do it that way anymore. They ship people there in buses. They don't let people drive. I mean, in the local high schools around me here in the suburbs of Chicago, they just kind of made it safe. You know, I know it's kind of an obscure point about that, but yeah, we need things that rite of passage of methods. And real quick, in terms of Rush Limbaugh, you know, I'm glad to see that he has left no legacy. No one ever talks about him anymore. There's no reverence. There's no there's no statue or Lumbo museum.
Well, the legacy that he's left, Steve, is 1,500 right-wing radio stations with probably a couple of thousand right-wing talk show hosts who are basically the right-wing farm team, and there's almost nothing like that on the left. That's a significant legacy, although it doesn't have his name associated with it. You're right.
Yeah. Well, there's no honoring. Well, in terms of honoring him, you don't hear him talked about much, which is probably a good thing.
No.
Anyway, thank you.
Yeah. Good points all. Thank you, Steve. Ken in Long Beach, California. Hey, Ken, what's up? Ken? I can't hear you, Ken.
Oh, I'm sorry, I dropped the phone.
Okay.
Anyway,
we're down
you
to
keep
less than
referring
a minute
to it as Reaganomics.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's more appropriate. At one point, H.W. Bush called it voodoo economics.
Yep. Yep, that's what we have been suffering under ever since 1981, is voodoo economics. I agree. And the first president to push back on it was Joe Biden. God bless him. Joe Biden, you know, one of the best presidents of my lifetime. And if only he had done his one-term thing and we had had a good primary and we'd had a good progressive candidate going forward. But, you know, here we are. Ken, thank you for the call. Spot on. It's just about 10 minutes before the hour. I'll be back with you in 60 seconds. Stay with us. Hey, thanks so much for sharing our program and for reaching out to our stations and sponsors and letting them know that you're listening. It really means a lot to us. Way back in 1964, when Lyndon Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act, the Republicans started this rant about how the election of 1960, Jack Kennedy stole that election, and there's voter fraud in America. And it became a thing. They started this thing called Operation Eagle Eye. William Rehnquist was running it in Arizona, trying to intimidate Hispanics and African Americans into not voting, essentially. They have now used this claim that non-citizens are voting, this voter fraud claim, in virtually every red state to make it harder to vote, to purge people off the voting rolls, to make people's votes not counted with their exact signature matches. It's a scam. It's a grift that they've been running for 60 years, and the American media won't call them out on it. There's a whole piece about it called Trump and the GOP's Big Lie 2.0 over at HartmanReport.com. Please check it out. You'll find it fascinating. 9 minutes before the hour, what's on your mind today? Ann in Moriarty, New Mexico. Hey, Ann, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Glad you could pick up my call. What I'm asking for everybody who hears this, and especially anybody who's associated with the No Kings or Indivisible, to send a copy of a constitution to the Supreme Court. And if you could afford it, send one to Mike Johnson, too.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're in a Republican state, send it to your Republican representatives.
Yeah.
I think that, if we could get enough people sending constitutions to them, they might decide to read it.
Sadly, we don't universally teach that in school anymore. That was the legacy of Bill, what's his name, Reagan's Bill Bennett, Reagan's education secretary, cutting the education budget by 19% in the first year. And civics was a big part of the chopping block there. The Republicans really like to dumb people down. As Donald Trump famously said, I love the poorly educated. So here we are.
I got our book to read the Constitution a few months ago, mm-hmm. when it became important that people really know what's actually in the Constitution.
Yeah, it's a little tiny thing, too, by the way. It's very short. It's
not that big. You could fit it in a plain envelope.
And, yep. Yep.
The postage shouldn't be that much.
I agree, Ann. That's a great suggestion. Thank you very much for the call and for the public service announcement. Roger in Seattle. Hey, Roger, what's up?
Well, thanks, Tom, for coming to Seattle to help with the KBCS fundraiser.
Oh, always a pleasure.
Two weeks ago, we had an Amy Goodwin fundraiser for KBCS.
Mm-hmm.
And on her segment just before this, she pointed out that the FCC chairman is the author of the Heritage Overreach book on the FCC,
mm-hmm.
and he's trying to follow chapter and verse of everything that he wrote.
Yep.
So I'm admitting here that maybe my glass half full attempt has to change subjects. I've been trying to get you and support me with maybe a date of impeachment, but I was talking to a progressive church friend of mine, and we're now thinking, well, if Iran isn't changing some of these, giving backbone to some of these Republicans, maybe we are going to have to wait till November. But anyway, what if we, last week I talked about just wars may be a topic you can put on your website. But what about one of the suggestions from one of your people listeners last week about having AIPAC register as a foreign agent? So maybe that would be I think you may already have a Palestine conflict on your website. Maybe you could update it by saying, oh, this is a reason that we should have AIPAC register as a foreign agent.
You'd have to change the Citizens United decision, which allows foreign governments, foreign entities, foreign billionaires, foreign corporations to interfere in U.S. elections. There are still some small
restrictions. That's what
was
pointed out by Amy's thing this morning, that the buying of Paramount or whatever it is, mm-hmm. instead of Netflix, might allow a lot of foreigners to take over a big part of our...
Oh, the Saudis have been helping finance both the acquisition of CBS and now the acquisition of CNN by the Ellison family, as for, I believe that that's what I've read. I mean, fact check me on that, but I believe that that's the case.
Well, yeah, I assume that's why the Amy Goodwin interview person mentioned that, then, that'll probably
that
be a good reason to go to court.
Yep. Yep, I'm with you. Roger, thank you. Well said. BB in Long Beach, California. Hey, BB, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Thank you so much for your radio program. I love it.
My pleasure.
And it's so informative.
Thank you.
Not like what I hear on the TV. I'm calling because our votes are just going actually nowhere. I mean, we're just totally being ignored by our vote, and we're always told, you know, our democracy, you know, your vote counts a lot. But I think that we need to take a new tack here. When Jimmy Kimmel was banned by ABC and people called in, you know, starting with Howard Stern and all these other subscribers, the minute they did that, I think $7 million was missing overnight or was taken away from ABC, you know, the funding.
Yeah.
And so I think that, the money is what's going to hit the pockets and change things faster than our votes do.
Yeah.
And so if people could, for a little while, give up their Hulu, their Disney, their Netflix, all that stuff, for just a little while, but it would hit in the pockets, and that would be more impressive than our votes.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't disagree with you, BB. I think the Jimmy Kimmel thing was maybe the exception that proves the rule. It was the anomaly, but I hope not. I hope you're right, and I would love to see a more concerted national effort. BB, thank you for the call.
Yeah, hit him in the pocket.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks for the call, and thanks for the suggestion. On the other side of the break, is Big Oil now employing the Department of Justice? This is crazy. I'll be right back with that and more of the news of the day and your calls right after this.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
X-Ray FM is supported by Slingshot Lounge. Located in southeast Portland on the corner of 56th and Foster, Slingshot Lounge offers an expansive game room, scratch cocktails, and a craft kitchen with a full menu until 2 a.m. Happy hour available weekdays from 3 to 7, and brunch weekends from noon to 4. Slingshot Lounge, decentralizing Portland since 2007.
This is Bird Note. Birds make all kinds of sounds, from squawks to chirps to warbles. And they can have different meanings. When you're first starting to bird by ear, it can be helpful to learn the difference between songs and calls. Birds produce songs to establish territory, attract a mate, and fend off rivals. They're more frequently performed by males during the breeding season, but many species sing year-round, and some female birds sing too. For example, male and female northern cardinals produce a song with clear whistles. Songs can also be dry and mechanical, like this chipping sparrow's. Or jumbled and metallic, like this great-tailed grackle's. For everything else they need to say, birds use calls. Contact calls help birds stick together while foraging or traveling. This American goldfinch makes a flight call to let the flock know he's still with the group. When there's danger nearby, black-capped chickadees make a distinctive alarm call. In fact,